Welcome to Bell Folks Stuff, an experimental podcast where I talk to interesting folks about really important stuff that they enjoy doing. Let's get started. Hey folks, it's time again for yet another episode of the Bell Folks Stuff podcast. This one is a little bit weird in the making because this is supposed to be the February episode, but life happened. Tonight, I am joined by a special guest, Kelric, who you might know from her awesome YouTube presence and her fairly prolific streaming. How are you doing tonight, Kelric?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. So yeah, this was I had originally intended to have you on early in the month on February, and then you kind of got a case of the death flu for a while.
Yeah.
So I knew you were going to be out of it, and then the tail end of the month, I had similar, so we're going to call this the February episode, even though it's not February anymore.
Damn it, let's call it February. I'm down with that.
Like, if I can lie and say it's evening when it's really afternoon for me, I can call it February.
Well, technically it is evening for me, so you're only half lying.
I'm only half lying. So hopefully you're having an awesome day. Like, I know you do farmy stuff and such on the weekends, so hopefully it hasn't been too painful of a Sunday.
No, it's been pretty good. I've been out all day just checking out cows and horses and things like that, so I've had a lot of fresh air, feeling a little bit tired now. I am a gamer after all. It's the only time I leave the house pretty much is when I go to the farm at the weekend.
But I always find that interesting because, like, I basically grew up on a farm. I mean, it wasn't a functioning farm, but my grandparents' land was beside where my house was growing up, and they had a dairy farm. So I grew up roaming around pastures all the time. So it's very natural for me to see your photos of farm life, and yeah, it seems normal.
Yeah, I'm sure for some, and even for me at first, it was just such a huge contrast, you know, visiting such a place when you spend all your time in a town or whatever. So it's really nice. It's a nice break.
So is this your farm or is this someone you know's farm?
No, it belongs to the parents of my fiance, and he keeps cows there. His mother has sheep and horses. So he generally helps out with all the other stuff, plus maintains looking after his cows.
But so yeah, this was probably a trial by fire when you first started going out there.
It really was, because I used to have this thing where I couldn't get dirty. Like, even if I had wellies on, which obviously I had to buy to go there, I didn't even like getting the wellies dirty. I didn't like walking through mud or anything. And now it's just, you know, just go get covered. Come home, and yeah, it's perfectly normal to me now, but it was very hard for me to get used to at first.
Yeah, there's definitely a moment where you get past the thought that that thing you think is mud really isn't mud.
Yeah. Because most of it, yeah, you just don't even want to, like...
No, you don't want to think about it. Yeah, so like, I grew up in the country like that, so it's just, it was normal for me, but most of the people that I live in, not a huge city, but a relatively sized city. And, you know, like, there's no cows around here. There's no agriculture. You have to drive an hour or so out of town to see anything. So it's definitely not the type of world that most people are used to.
Indeed. I recently, like, in the past year, we moved house. I was in a town, and now I'm in the middle of nowhere. And if I look out my window right now, there's a field of sheep in it. So I'm surrounded by it now.
Are you enjoying that? Are you finding it more peaceful?
It's definitely peaceful. Well, you follow me on Twitter, so you know I have an annoying neighbor that likes to go out and fire up an electric saw for 12 hours a day for some reason. But apart from that, it's really nice and peaceful. It's nice having that sort of environment to look at all the time. Very peaceful.
I've always wanted to find that balance because, like, I want to be within, like, 30 minutes of, you know, major shopping centers, but I also would love to be, like, to where I can't look out the window and see the next-door neighbor. So I haven't found that quite yet.
Yeah, I would say if you're in a position like that, that you're very, very fortunate. There's not, especially around here, there's not many people that can say that, you know. But we used to live sort of a 30-minute drive from a major city, that had everything. So if you wanted to go out for an evening or you wanted to go special shopping, you could, but then you could leave it all behind and go home to your quiet little road.
I've just gotten so spoiled right now because where I live, within a mile of my house is everything I could ever possibly want. That is, that I could actually get local. Yeah, if I can't get it within a mile of the house, I'd have to order it from somewhere else. And I've just gotten used to that, and it would be hard to give that up.
That is definitely a major downside. I mean, pretty much anything I want that isn't standard stuff, I have to buy online. Like a good example of this is I've got some pictures I want to frame, and there is just nothing like in a 50-mile radius of me that will frame pictures, so I have to go online.
Ouch.
And order everything. It's stuff like that, you know. Normally you think, oh, I'll just pop out into town and get this done. It's like, nope, not while we're living here.
Yeah, that would be rough too, because, like, you know, say it's on a weekend and you blow a power supply on your computer, and I know at least I can go, you know, within a minute or two of the house and get something that would work. It may not be what I actually wanted, but it would be enough to get me limping along to get back up and running. And it would be rough to know that, nope, that's a 2-week delivery or a, you know, whatever to get the parts that you need.
Yeah. Fortunately, because me and my fiancé are both gamers, we have a lot of hardware lying around as we upgrade stuff. We're terrible that we don't throw anything away. But then there's always a time where it's like, oh, thank God we don't throw anything away because now I need this.
Yeah, I've gone through the same thing too, because, like, I will have these great clean-out days where I take everything to Goodwill, but I'll end up taking, like, what is essentially 3 complete computers that are, you know, 10 years old that I still had laying in the closet.
Yeah, it can get a bit much, especially Mac, my fiancé. He's just got, you know, like, tower cases and old motherboards, just all really awkward stuff to store just lying around. It's... We need to have a clear out. In fact, thank you for bringing this up, because I'm going to have to pester him now. And I'll tell him he can blame you when I...
I don't want to be blamed for this.
Well, you know, once a year, maybe, just go through some stuff and check out the junk. But it's like, a good example is I've had 3 full sacks of old clothes that I want to get rid of. And I want to take it to the local charity shop. And they've been sat in the spare bedroom probably for about 5 months now.
Yeah, we're the same way. And we tend to try and time it around the first of the year so that we can, you know, get a tax credit for the donation. Because I don't know if, you know, the UK does that sort of thing. But, you know, if you give, you know, stuff away to charity, you can usually get a little bit of a tax write-off, which is, it's an extra impetus to get it out the door. And it also helps to close down the clutter. Yeah, so I don't know if that exists for you, but it does here in the US.
I've certainly not heard of it, but it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. So one of the things that I always try and do is basically diagnose how I know this person. And for you, I know without a doubt that I followed you on Twitter before I followed your YouTube channel. And I don't know why I followed you on Twitter. And the only thing I could think of is it was probably through some exchange you had with Alternative Chat. That's just my theory as to probably why I was tipped off to you being existing. But, you know, I've played a DK for a very long time, so I think I probably followed you because, you know, your Twitter handle is KelrickDK.
I don't remember. Like, we've been following each other for so long now, I'm not even sure when that relationship, that lovely Twitter relationship began. I know when I first started Twitter, I really wanted to follow other people in the community, and I was really sort of eagerly seeking out like-minded people that specifically spoke about WoW, and obviously over time our interests have changed to involve other games as well.
But I know there was a moment that happened when I had apparently been following your YouTube presence, and I never connected the dots that you were the same person.
Oh, wow. So
yeah.
You followed me on Twitter.
And then I followed you on YouTube, and for some reason, I never connected the dots that you were the same person, because I was going to go solo something, and I don't remember what it was, and you had a soloing it as a DK video. I'm like, okay, I'll watch this. And then I decided you have really good videos, so I started watching your videos. And then it was like a couple days later that it finally dawned on me that, oh, crap, that's the same person.
That is crazy. it's something that I've found in the last few weeks is I definitely know I have some Twitter followers that don't actually watch my YouTube videos. And I'm not entirely sure why that is. I mean, I'm grateful, you know, to have the followers, but I'm not too sure. I mean, I tend to be talking about it most of the time, or at the very least what I'm doing in games. But I love Twitter as a platform anyway. It's just a really great way to just reach out to other people and experience other things and other people's opinions. I really, really love Twitter.
I have to say, you have the infamy of being quite literally the only YouTuber that I watch on a regular basis.
Really? That's
yeah, like I which is this is weird, and I've been talking to people about this whole, it's almost like a cultural shift that I'm experiencing where, like, I'm a blogger. That's primarily what I am. I write blogs, I occasionally do streaming, occasionally upload said streams to YouTube, but I am very much not connected to YouTube in a significant way. And I will admit, it frustrates the hell out of me when I go looking for information and all I can find is a video on it. And there's no blog post that I can read with the same information. But when I quit playing WoW for a while, I was essentially using your YouTube channel as a way of keeping me in touch with the community, even though I wasn't playing it. And I viewed that as a very valuable service because you did this awesome job of condensing important information into a, you know, 5-10 minute spiel that would catch me up to date on what was going on. And I was still reading bloggers, but bloggers don't always deliver this is what's coming down the pipe information. They do a lot more commentary on things that they, you know, find interesting. And you did these great, dense informational posts that kept me up to date with what was happening. So I could at least speak intelligibly about what was happening in WoW, even when I wasn't playing it. But I wonder, like, I mean, are you primarily a consumer of YouTube information as far as where you get your news and information, or are you out on forums and blogs reading that sort of information?
This is going to sound really strange because as a prolific YouTuber and the type of content that I'm known for making, I don't actually watch the same sort of videos as what I make. So I actually really enjoy visiting websites. I get a lot of information from Twitter. It's the fastest way of just being, you know, bam, right up to date. This is an important topic. This is what everyone's interested in right now. And then if you want to go a bit more in depth, then you can visit the official websites. You can go to the well-known fan websites. Like for WoW, it's going to be WoWhead and MMO Champion. So I actually enjoy reading the stuff because a lot of times the thing I've found with other YouTubers, and maybe I just haven't found the right ones, they tend to give me too much of, well, this is what I think about it, and this is why I think it's terrible, and I'm sure everyone agrees with me, and I just hate that type of commentary. I would much rather just read the facts, divine my own opinion, and sort of, I don't know, just disseminate it the way I want to, if you like.
And I think that's what I appreciate about your style of YouTube videos, and that's why you're literally the only person I watch on a regular basis, is you are giving me a version of a YouTube video that is very familiar to me in my reading news sites. Like, it feels like you are reporting the news to me. And you keep this whole persona of you are sitting at a desk reporting the news to me. Like, it's very much it's not super formal, but it's formal enough to feel like you put a lot of work into it ahead of actually recording. That you didn't just turn on your camera and now you're going to start, you know, rattling things off, which is ironic considering that pretty much when I record podcasts, I just turn on the mic and start rattling things off. But
yeah, I just really, really enjoy, I like the idea of being a news type person, and I try to deliver that in a professional way. I like to mix in a little bit here and there, you know, here are the highlights, boom, 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 and this is what I think of this, this is why I think this is a good idea, and I think this is where something needs a bit more work, but here are the facts that you can take to the bank, you know. And I do enjoy the whole crafting of that sort of video. It's very creative. You know, it requires research. Yes, it takes time to research. But it's also nice to do something like that when I don't do scripts. So it, I guess it keeps that kind of, even though it's professionally done, or at least that's the way I aim for it to come across, it's professionally done, but it's still slightly informal because I'm not reading off a script. And if a thought comes into my mind, then I can say it, you know. It's a nice mix between the two, I think. At least that's what I aim for.
And I think it accomplishes that, definitely. I feel like you produce, your production quality is extremely high compared to what I'm used to. And I would think that's probably one of the reasons why, you know, people stick to your videos, because you are producing something that's has high value, that it's content dense. It gives you the essence of what you need to know, but at the same time, you know, your personality is showing through. And right or wrong, people either read posts or, you know, watch YouTube because of the person that's doing it. And you definitely have a pleasant persona that, you know, feels very approachable, but at the same time, very wise about your information. And I think that gives you more credibility when you raise a point that's bothering you. And I'm thinking right now of our combined angst with the changes to Blood at the release of Warlords of Draenor. And I know we had several conversations about this. So when you wrapped up your thoughts into a video, because you aren't known for creating angsty videos, it's like it gave it way more credibility than you normally would have when someone does a video complaining about the changes they didn't like, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's really nice to hear that. Thank you. I've always been someone that tries to be a bit more positive about things, because there's so many people out there, so many content creators out there right now that are very negative, very critical, and that's okay. That's the way they are. And in fact, it's a very good way of being successful in a way, because people just love drama. But I try to be positive. I have that thing, you know, if you've got nothing nice to say, don't say it. But at the same time, if it's really important, sometimes you do just have to come out and say it. So when I made that video, I'm glad that you picked up on it. It meant that this was definitely a change that I disagreed with. And I had very definite reasons as to why I didn't agree with the change. And at the end of the day, you know, well, World of Warcraft developers will do what they like with the class design, but I'm going to tell people why I personally will not be playing this class anymore unless it gets changed back. It's not a threat. It's just saying, you know, this is how many years I've played this class. This is why I've always enjoyed it. You've now changed it to a playstyle that isn't enjoyable. And these are the things I believe would get me to play it again. And it's just one of those things where sometimes you do just have to, you know, say those things in that sort of video, but so long as you're constructive, I feel it's fine. And as you say, I'm not really known for making that sort of complaining type videos, so I'm glad that you felt it gave it a bit more credibility.
Yeah, I mean, because you get used to the people that like to rant, and every video that they create is a rant video, and I just don't need that kind of negativity in my life. I can find enough fault with things on my own. So I always appreciate when someone is, you know, overly positive about, you know, their approach on things. And it doesn't have to mean that you agree with everything, and it doesn't have to mean that you like everything. But at the end of the day, we play these games to have fun. So it seems counterproductive that, you know, all we can think about is the bad of the game instead of, you know, dwelling on the parts that we do enjoy.
Yeah, it's like the recent whole patch 6.1 for Raw, because it didn't bring any content, and there was like a big portion of the online World of Warcraft community that were absolutely just up in arms about it, very, very upset. And it was quite awkward for me, because I just wanted to say in my videos, especially the newsy ones, so, you know, my sort of opinion on it would not necessarily fit that sort of video, but I just wanted to focus, well, this is what 6.1 is delivering. This is why these particular features are good features and ones to look forward to. But at the same time, everyone was just so angry that there was no physical content. There was, you know, there was no new zones or anything to go to. So I have to say, I've probably recorded two commentaries talking about it. and not used either one. It's just not my thing, I guess.
I feel to some extent that this is a tragic case of they were overprepared for the content, because normally when 6.1 landed, we would have gotten BlackRock Foundry. That's normally what would have happened. But instead, they had BlackRock Foundry ready to go prior to 6.1 and released it on a schedule. And I feel like all of the drama surrounding 6.1 would not have happened had they just made us wait until 6.1 to get BlackRock Foundry. Because people would have felt that, oh, here's the content that came with the patch. When in reality, we got that content ahead of time. We just got the quality of life changes. And I feel like my frustrations with the 6.1 rabble has been putting down features that I thought were brilliant and revolutionary, like the colorblind shift. And for most players, that's not a big deal, but I have a good friend that I've raided with since vanilla, and we have to tailor advisement and directions around the fact that we know he can't see the color of the things that we're marking. So that was a huge thing for us personally, that he's going to be able to shift around his UI to make sense. And to a lot of players, they saw that as just a silly feature, but that's a game-changing feature for somebody that needs it.
Absolutely. Apparently it was something like 10% of players had some sort of colorblind, something to do with colorblindness, even if they weren't 100% colorblind. And that's right. What this feature was fixing for those people. So if there's still 10 million subscribers, that's a lot of people that are now being able to play a lot more comfortably. So that sort of thing is an important change. It's important quality of life. But generally, the people online are not going to see that as an interesting feature, and they're going to see it instead as something that took time away from the Iron Docks hub or something. But Absolutely, the BlackRock Foundry, in a way, they should have just waited and put it into the patch 6.1 so that people could you know, say, well, this is our content. Instead, they rushed it out. Obviously, it was ready, so they said, let it go live. But I do know there was a lot of people, even back then, talking about how it's too long between Highmall and BlackRock Foundry. Now, these are obviously Mythic people
Who
are saying these things, who have just absolutely crunched their way through the content, and that's fine. But I don't know, the vast majority of people are not doing Mythic, as far as I'm concerned. So I think maybe the WoW devs felt a little bit of pressure to hurry it out, and they said, you know what, it's ready, let's get it out. But definitely they should have waited for 6.1 to release it, and this whole thing perhaps would not have happened.
Well, and that's the unfortunate thing about having such a big community, is everything gets amplified. I think probably on average most players are just perfectly fine with the game in its current state. But when you have as many players as you do in a game like World of Warcraft, you're going to get a much larger percentage that are negative. And those are the people that tend to take to forums. Those are the people that tend to take to Twitter and get angry when the game doesn't match what their vision of the game should be. And just in my own guild, it seems like most everybody's happy. We're slowly progressing through BlackRock Foundry. We're making steady movement. And you know, we are definitely not the cutting-edge Mythic Raiders, but I still think they are probably such a small percentage of the community as a whole that while they're a very vocal percentage, they don't really represent the bulk of the people playing the game.
Absolutely. And you sort of touched on something that I wanted to bring up, and that was the fact that not everyone who plays this game actually participates online in terms of the social media presence, and even on YouTube. They don't go to YouTube and leave, you know, any sort of comment on videos, to be honest. So it's a really weird situation to be in, because on the one hand, you know that it's the people who are online and like to tweet the devs and everything. You know the sort of person that generally is. And I hate to use the word generally, but I think you can get the idea of what I'm saying. But the vast majority of players, they just log in and play and then log out again. You know, there is no coming to Twitter and tweeting at Warcraft, fix PvP now. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like, I have a really large guild. It's a day one guild from launch back in 2004. And we have, I don't know, 900 characters in the guild. And I can't even get these people to regularly use a guild forum, let alone go to the World of Warcraft forums or use Twitter or Anouk or anything else that we have. They just want to log in and play the game and, you know, fiddle with their garrison and do some LFR and, you know, log in Tuesdays and Thursdays to raid and hang out on voice. And they don't care. They don't care what's going on in the world. They like to hear bits of news about what's coming up and, you know, things that have been teased like the time walking system. But they don't care. Like, they aren't as concerned as, you know, the impression you would get by reading online sites.
Absolutely.
So I try and take everything with a grain of salt because I know I am not the average player. I am a far more intricate player as far as looking for information and keeping up on the rumors and things that are going on. And that's a hard realization for someone to have to make, that they do not represent the norm. Because, you know, I feel, as human beings, we all feel like we represent the average or we're normal. And to have a harsh reality check that you are not normal when it comes to the way you play something, it's a bitter pill to swallow.
It's something that a lot of people tend to forget as well. You know, the people who are creating content like on YouTube and podcasts and blogs and everything like that, it's easy to get sucked up inside the tornado of the whole, just the whole social media politics of it all, if you like.
Yeah.
We do not represent normal players, and we will definitely look into things a lot deeper than most people will. We'll try to read between the lines and see things that perhaps aren't even there. The one regret that I have is the Warcraft devs, that they just don't use Twitter anymore to talk about things. And that was something I was thoroughly enjoying when they all seemed to go through that phase of answering questions all the time and making little announcements and asking questions from the community as well. And now all of that's just shut down.
But,
I feel really sad about that.
And I wonder if that's just a remnant of the post-Ghostcrawler era, that he was so much a person that was constantly on Twitter. And even after he left, there was still a lot of engagement, but now we just have that Warcraft devs account that has only the scantest of information that comes across it. So I don't know. I always appreciate companies that do have a robust Twitter presence and that actually give real information, not just political answers.
Yeah, it's nice to get to know them a little bit as well. And the only thing is, you know, they must get so much negativity constantly. So I can understand why they would want to maybe shut down their personal accounts when it comes to talking about work and then just have that one official account that various employees will take in turns using. But it is a shame. I think if you're in that situation, if you're tweeting something, in a way, you almost can't read any of the responses unless you give that job just to someone else or go through these responses, see if there's anything actual worthwhile in there.
Well, and I think that's probably the greatest issue with the World of Warcraft community, is just that it has become so toxic over the years. And I don't fully understand it, I guess. I never really have. Because World of Warcraft is probably the most approachable, most easy to get into game that I've ever played. And they do a lot of things that really are for the average player. But so much of the community and the politics and the rhetoric that surrounds it is just so toxic to new players. And it's always felt
unique.
What?
I don't think that's unique to World of Warcraft.
It's not unique to World of Warcraft, but I've played a lot of smaller games, and they don't have that issue that World of Warcraft does. So it may be a problem of scale. Because I know, like, the League of Legends community is horrifically toxic, but so it may just come with popularity, but it's unfortunate because here's this game that is so open and easy to get somebody started in, but it's hard to find players that are willing to help other players out.
That is true. I mean, on the one hand, you have an online community, and from my personal experience, wherever there's an online community, there's always going to be negativity, and it's always going to be amplified online as well. But then you've also got the game design itself, which has steered the game away from being this social interactive experience, because, you know, you had the cross-realm thing come in, which suddenly it didn't matter if you had friends on your own realm. It didn't matter if you had a reputation on your own realm, because you could just do all the cross-realm stuff. You could hug so much easier. I mean, back in TBC, which is when I started playing, you did make friendships and maintain relationships with just random people you bumped into while trying to set up a dungeon run, you know. And you did, hey man, can I add you to my friends and maybe we'll do this again? Yeah, sure.
Oh yeah, I had huge friends lists that were basically just my grouping list. They were known good people that I could rely on to make a dungeon work, and that went away with the Dungeon Finder.
Absolutely. So even though there was all these cool features and, you know, features designed to make things a lot easier for you and to reduce waiting times for things, even those were all good features and it looked great on paper, what actually happened was it took away the whole social aspect of the game. And suddenly it didn't matter whether you were nice or awful to people. It just, there was no repercussions whatsoever.
And that tends to be it, is when you take the repercussions out of it, people will revert to, I don't want to say the worst version of themselves, because people definitely do good acts in even the most toxic of systems, but people will just not care about anyone other than themselves, more than likely.
Absolutely.
And that's sad, because I've played games before, and they were just so happy to see new people popping into the server that, like, I can remember one time when I created a new character in EverQuest 2 after being gone for a very long time. Just some random person walked up to me and dropped 4 or 5 pieces of gear on me and a bunch of money and said, welcome to the server. And little things like that just don't, like, we used to do those back in the early days in World of Warcraft, but that thing just doesn't happen anymore. I would go over to newbie zones and drop stuff on people in, you know, North Shire or whatever. And it doesn't happen. Like, I don't know why I don't feel as connected as I once did for doing that sort of thing.
No, I agree. And it's one of the reasons why I sort of cling to the friendships that I have left within this game, because it is really, really hard to make new friends now. Unless you sort of know someone IRL who's playing and can introduce you to people, there's no way of making a connection with another player. I mean, I don't consider myself to be awful to strangers when I do pug, but, you know, I have no interest in talking to anybody. I have no interest in having any sort of interaction with them at all. I just want to get in. I expect them to do their job. I'll do my job, and then we'll leave, and I'll never see them again. And I hate being that way.
I hate having the anxiety of running pugs. Like, I have this mental block that I just do not like tanking for pugs. I should tank, because God knows that, you know, the server needs tanks to be running pugs. But I don't know, like, I am willing to put myself through the ringer for my friends, but when I don't have a connection to these other players that are probably going to yell at me for not pulling fast enough, it just doesn't feel like it's worth the effort.
Yeah, it's easy to just say, you know what, I'm not up for this tonight. I'm not feeling maybe emotionally strong enough for this right now, so I'm going to queue up as DPS and let someone else do the job. And that is a shame, because then you have people who could be tanking, who are perfectly good at tanking, who are just deterred from queuing as that role, and as a result, queue times are extended. I mean, I used to think I was a pretty good tank. I've been doing it for 8 years. And even I would still get this from pugs, you know, noob tank, WTF
yep.
are you doing, pull quicker, learn to taunt, you know what I mean? It's just, I'm not interested in that sort of gameplay. That is not fun for me, so I will be leaving now. Good day, sir.
Yeah, and I will queue as Gladiator DPS rather than queue as Protection Tank, which is sad, because I have exactly the right gear to do either role. But it's just not worth the hassle. It's not worth the hassle to deal with either people that are going to berate you or just silently, you know, go off into the next room and pull ahead of you. It's just, and it's sad. Like, I miss the days when I had a robust friends list and a bunch of social channels, and I would build groups by hand out of those and got to know so many people doing that. And they're people that I still keep in contact with today. They're not necessarily playing WoW still, but I still hang out with them whenever I can. In fact, right before the podcast, I was messaged over Google Talk by a healer that I hadn't talked to in, I don't know, 2-3 years. And we're just catching up with what's going on in each other's lives. And this is absolutely somebody I met through pugging. And it's sad because that's a whole aspect of the game that made the game rich and enjoyable that just isn't there anymore. And I don't know how to bring it back. And that's the problem. I wish I knew how to fix it.
Unfortunately, I don't think there is a fix for it without actually reverting all of the features that they introduced, like the group finder, like LFR, because there's just no way you can go back to that environment again, from what I can tell. And it's one of the things that made World of Warcraft, in my opinion anyway, as popular as it did. It was a social thing, while also being an awesome game and giving you this awesome sense of achievement, and there was stuff for you to work towards. And it was a fantastic game, but the social element really did make it so special. And I feel that as the years have gone on now, that social experience has diminished a lot, a huge amount. And in return, it sort of made content very disposable. People are consuming the content quicker. You know, they want new raids because you can just go through on LFR and just kick it all.
Push button, get epics.
Yeah. I don't think you can go back without removing all of the things that they implemented. And I'm not sure the community now, because it's evolved so much, they probably wouldn't tolerate it.
And I think that's what, like, one of the interesting things that's happened for me, at least, is I'm actively raiding in World of Warcraft and in Final Fantasy XIV at the same time. And it's interesting to see how each of those games and each of those communities handles this sort of thing. And one of the things that I gotta give Square credit for is they have done amazing work in trying to understand the social aspect of the game and understand player motivation and the psychology of what they do. Because they have this system in there of player commendations, and you get one of them. And you can only give it to someone who is not in your guild, or actually in, you did not queue with. So you have to give a commendation to somebody who you didn't actually bring into the dungeon. So you can't trade commendations. But there's all this stuff tied to the commendations that people want, these shiny mounts and cosmetic outfits. And it's created this weird, super friendly zone where everyone wants to be nice to other players. And like the first time you run a dungeon, you get bonus currency if a brand new player's in there. So it's like it's changed the dynamic where people don't berate somebody for being a noob. They look forward to having a new player because it means they're going to get their, you know, it's basically the equivalent of valor points quicker because they're new. You know, you're going to get bonus for helping this new person through the zone. And it's funny what a difference that kind of has made with the way that community is. Because you have people randomly running across the zone to res players for no reason. Like, there's no benefit to that other than the fact that they're just being nice. And it's just so weird to see. That's kind of the way the World of Warcraft community felt at the beginning. And it's just interesting to be playing both at the same time. And I feel like one has done a really good job of focusing on the psychology of players, and one has focused on making lowering the barrier of entry at all costs.
Yeah, definitely. They have tried to cater to several different demographics, if you like. They want to be able to give people who only have 30 minutes to an hour a day to play, they want to give those players something to do, but at the same time, they want to give the players who can play every single day and do play every single day, they want to give them enough to keep them interested. And they're not there yet, unfortunately. I thought Wall's Adrenaline was probably going to be that one expansion to rule them all. I thought it was going to fix a lot of things, and it just hasn't. And I'm not sure why. I can't quite put my finger on it. But there's something not quite right with it. And I find that whole, what you were talking about, the environment in the Final Fantasy game. It's really interesting how they've put in rewards for having things that in World of Warcraft would be considered a hindrance, having a nuke
right.
in your group. But in that game, they reward you for having such a thing. So that's really interesting, and I wonder if it's something that they can learn from.
And other games have done that. To some extent, League of Legends put in a player commendation type system, and it hasn't fixed the community, but it's less toxic than it was before that system went in. So it's basically bribery. It's bribery for being nice, but I am not opposed to being bribed to be nice. Like, I think that's cool. I would rather have a nicer environment and people get bribed to be nice to me.
I guess. I mean, it's like in the real world, you wouldn't commit a crime unless you were prepared to maybe go to prison for it. If there was a good chance you're going to get caught. And you could kind of call that bribery in a way, but at the same time, it's just, doing the right thing and being rewarded for doing the right thing and being a nice person. So I'd love to see something like that come to World of Warcraft. One thing I definitely wanted them to add was the whole, take away mob tagging. That's what I wanted them to do.
Yes.
The moment years ago when I logged into Guild Wars 2 for the first time, and I saw that system where people could just come along and help you kill a bunch of mobs, and everyone would get the credit for it. It blew my mind when I saw that. It was absolutely amazing. And I was like, this has to come into World of Warcraft. And then there was that whole mob tagging discussion and debate and how they like the system the way it is and stuff like that. I was like,
There's so much artificial competition in World of Warcraft that doesn't make sense. Like, and I think that's part of what drives players to not be nice to each other, is because you see other people in the field as being someone you're competing with, not being someone that you're sharing the journey with.
Definitely.
I mean, and it's everything. It's everything from ore nodes to mob tagging to back in the day when there were treasure chests. If you saw someone in the same area as you, you wanted to pull faster so you could get to whatever was at the end of the zone before they could, because by God, I don't want them to come take my toys. And it's just, there's a lot of artificial competition there that I think we'd be better off without.
Definitely. I don't know if you've ever caught any of my live streams when I've played WoW and I've been questing or something, but I get furious if I'm out questing and it's like, kill 10 whatever, kill 10 of these guys, and there's only like, say, 12 of these mobs in the area, and then I see someone else come along and they're clearly doing the same quest, I get so angry with them.
Yeah, and it's
like,
it's just,
how dare you be playing my MMO when I'm here trying to get my quest done?
Right, and I get angry and I start over pulling. Like, I will go wipe the entire zone just to make sure I get my 10 mobs, and I hate that. Like, but it's this negative instinct, and I don't know how to get myself out of it. Like, I know what I am doing is not good, but I can't stop it because it's like I feel like I have to get my objectives done so I can move on to the next thing, so I can keep having fun.
Yeah, I hate it because in the back of your mind there's a little voice saying, just invite them to group. Invite them to group and share the kills. And the really loud voice in the rest of my head is like, F them. Steal every kill that you can. And it's just a horrible way to be. And if they just took the whole mob tagging thing out, it would be such a nicer environment. It would make such a difference, I feel.
Yeah. It's just little tweaks like that that I think would make all the difference in the world. And it's not that case. And that's one of the things, is like, I think that to some extent adds to why Final Fantasy has a more friendly community, is that a lot of those things just don't exist. Like, ore nodes are, personal to the player. Mob tagging, if you do a certain amount of damage anyway, you're going to get something off of them. You'll get credit, So it's a lot more equitable as far as, helping other players. And another big thing, and this is maybe a weird point, but there's no parsers in Final Fantasy XIV, or not widely used parsers. In fact, to some extent, it's outlawed by the devs. Like, so if they are okay with you using log parsers for your own purposes, but if they catch you, bad-mouthing a player because they're not doing enough damage because, they showed up on your parser, that's actually justifiable action for negative actions against your account.
Wow.
So it's just a different mindset, and I don't know, like, I think it's part of it comes from the fact that, you know, everything in World of Warcraft was set up to be a zone of conflict where you've got red versus blue and we're all at war, and maybe that's the mindset that they wanted to create all along, but I feel like it would be a happier place if people got along better.
Definitely. I wish we could go back to the good old days.
And that's the thing, is like when I talk about the good old days, I did 40 man, you know, Molten Core during the LFR phase. I don't ever want to go back to 40 man Molten Core. I remembered all the bad things within like the first 5 minutes of pulling. It's just I miss the social connectivity that we used to have. And like right now, most of the people that I bring into my guilds, I'm finding through blogging or Twitter or, you know, some form of social media. I'm not actually finding them in game.
Mm.
And then, yeah, you know, obviously when you invite one person, they have friends and they bring their friends and it's a little organic, but I'm not finding new people in game.
All of the most recent additions to my guild, and I say recent, but mean over the last 12 months or so, they've all been people that I've found through streaming. You know, they've been my viewer at one point, and they've become friends, and then have joined the guild, and they're still there now today. So I can absolutely agree with you there, and I don't remember the last time I made a friend actually in game, and that's really sad to me.
And the saddest thing is like when I meet someone in game, I'm immediately suspicious of their motivations.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't trust them because they weren't vetted before, you know, we entered this conversation. And I hate that. Like, I don't know how to stop it. And that's the problem, is I know it's bad. I know I am making things worse, but I don't know how to stop that instinct.
I'm the same way, but I'm on one of those role-playing realms, so...
I am also on a role-playing realm. We are on the same realm, just on two different servers.
Oh,
or two
really?
Different... Yeah, I'm on Argent Dawn US.
Well, then we both have extra reason to be cautious of strangers.
Yeah, like, I mean, like I said, Argent Dawn has had its notorious problems over the years, but... So, okay, this is a question I didn't play on... I don't know much about the EU version of Argent Dawn, other than it exists. Were you guys picked on by the PvPers like we were on the US version?
In what way? Like, where?
So, okay, so we were the first role-playing server in the list, like the first alphabetical role-playing server. So anyone that had an axe to grind with Blizzard would come create protests on our server. So the Gnome Warrior protest back in early vanilla was on our server. Anytime BlackRock, which was a fairly famous PvP server, went down, they would create level 1 gnomes on our server to crash our server in protest. It was a really fraught beginning of our server.
I don't recall any of that happening.
Really?
It's always been a high population server, and many times has been locked, actually. And I think that's purely just because it begins with A, it's at the top of the list, so new players come in and just click the first realm on the list. And then they either stay or they don't. I don't recall any special events like that happening.
Yeah, we got a lot of weird people that had an axe to grind with Blizzard rolling characters on our server and causing havoc for us. Because there was a lot of raid nights that we couldn't raid because the server wasn't stable, because somebody was angry. So I was always curious if, like, the EU version had that same problem, but... You guys as a whole seem more sensible than, you know, us Americans.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. We're just non-sensible in different ways.
Yeah. So one of the things I did want to talk, I know we've talked quite a bit already, is your whole decision to do the YouTube thing full time. How did that come about? Because that's been one of the most interesting things to follow. Being a friend of yours and watching you go through that, how did you make the decision to jump and try it?
Oh, man. I don't even know where to begin answering that question. I was just doing it, like, I'd been doing it for 2 years or so. Yeah, about 2 years. The first year, I was just kind of feeling my way. I was just having fun, and I was kind of sharing my guild's boss kills with people. And then I started accumulating some subscribers and some regular viewers, and I really got the bug for it, and I started experimenting with different things. And bear in mind, pretty much everything I did was World of Warcraft related.
Right.
So then in the second year, I was really spurred on by some of the success I'd been having, and I started specifically creating videos to help people. So here's a guide to do this. Here's a guide if you want that achievement, or if you want to get this rare mount. And then I started talking about the news. Hey, did you hear what Blizzard announced yesterday? Let's talk about it. And the whole thing just morphed, and I really started gathering up a lot of momentum. And I was doing this while also working a full-time job in real life. And YouTube itself had taken over to the point where it was taking as much of my time as my actual full-time jobs. So it's like doing two full-time jobs in a way.
Yeah.
But the day job was paying the bills, and the night job, YouTube, was just feeding my obsession, which I had managed to build without really knowing. And I spoke to my fiancé and I said, you know, I really feel that if I was to have more time to dedicate to this, I feel like I could take it to the next level and maybe start bringing in money to pay the rent. Just out of making videos, which I'm having this, you know, so much fun doing. And he was very, very supportive and said, yeah, do it. I wasn't having a great time in my real work life. So I desperately just wanted to work for myself. I knew I had the motivation. I would put all the hours into it that was necessary because it was a work of love, if you like.
Yeah.
And I've officially been doing it full time for just over a year now.
And how has that gone?
The first half of the year was really good. The second half of the year has been pretty poor. YouTube is just such a fickle beast. Sometimes stuff happens. It's like the tide coming in and out. And sometimes it's just not in your control. Other times it is. There's so many factors to be just thinking about constantly. What are people watching? You know, well, they were watching this last month, but they're not interested in it anymore. So what could I make instead that they might want to watch? And it's a really, really just strange and weird job, because it doesn't matter how much time you put into it, it doesn't guarantee you will get anything back.
And that looks to me like that would be the frustrating thing, is because YouTube viewers are by nature very flighty, and what's hot this week is not hot the next week. And I don't know if I could handle trying to jump through those hoops, because especially for a site like, or a channel like you run, you have a high level of integrity in the product that you create. And I could see how someone that was willing to follow whatever whim the community happened to want this week would do really well, but by someone who's trying to create a pretty consistent product, I don't know, that would seem like it would be frustrating when the thing that you know is good isn't actually getting any views.
Yeah, it is such a frustrating job. I mean, it's a job that I love. I wish there was more, what's the word? I wish that no matter like how much effort you put in, if you put huge amounts of effort in, I wish that that was then converted into results. So when I say results, I mean the people who subscribe to me in the first place are interested enough to click the video. Maybe they'll hit the like button as well, but that just isn't the case. And then you start comparing, you get into this horrible habit, by the way, you start comparing yourself to other YouTubers that are kind of similar to you, but you know you're doing something slightly different. But let's say another World of Warcraft YouTuber, you're like, well, they're getting loads more views than I am. We're kind of doing the same thing, but of course I feel like I'm doing a better job, or what have you. And it's like, why? And then you just start doubting yourself, and it's just a horrible, horrible circle to be trapped in. You know, you just go round and round, and in the end, you just have to say, you know what? I need to make the videos that I enjoy making. Hopefully, you know, people will watch them. If they don't, we'll try and get new people in to watch them. But it requires so much of your time to be making videos that you don't enjoy making. I can't even imagine. I just can't even imagine what it would be like, to be honest. You just can't do YouTube that way. Not for very long, anyway.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like there's I go through the same thing with blog readers. And to some extent, there's two vastly different kinds of viewers and readers. There are the people that, for whatever reason, started watching your videos and then became personally invested in you as a person.
Yeah.
And they're going to stick around forever because they care about you. They care about what you have to say, your daily struggles, whatever. Then there's the people that came here for information, and or they came here because they read a thing, or they you had something on there that interests them. But if that's not there at any point, they're gone. Like, the second it's gone, they have no attachment to you whatsoever. And I've never been able to figure out how to convert people from one to the other. Like, someone who came for the information, but now stays because it's, you know, you, or... And that's just such a weird thing. And I am so thankful that all the side projects I do are exactly that, side projects. But
I'd imagine that's so much harder to do when blogging, because it's people connecting to you through the flavor of your writing.
Right.
Whereas if you're a YouTuber and you happen to be, well, I mean, even just having somebody's voice commentating over the video, a person has a slim chance of liking the voice, liking the way you speak and the things that you say, and they get more and more attached to you as a person, or as much as they can, because you're still just someone on the internet. And then if you're someone that uses a webcam as well, people will look at you and decide instantly if they like you or they hate you, you know? But with blogging, it must be so much harder to convert those readers over to people who will just read because you wrote it.
Yeah.
I'd imagine it seems to be. Writing about would play a much larger part than it would for YouTube content.
Well, and there's a weird thing with it seems like players who are WoW players are usually only interested in WoW, but players who are you know, players of other games tend to be really interested in whatever MMO happens to be going down the pipe. So I would say I don't have a lot of WoW demographic readers, because while I play WoW, I don't exclusively play WoW. I know I had a decent Twitter following, and then I left at Cataclysm to go play Rift, and in one day, the second I started talking about Rift, I lost over half of my Twitter followers. And it was such a weird thing to go through. Like, these are people that you thought you had made a connection with, but just because I was playing the wrong game, they had no interest in me anymore. And so it's kind of a harsh reality check. And yeah, it's also made me appreciate the people that do talk to me on a daily basis and are the ones that, like, if it's 8 o'clock and I don't have a blog post, they're pinging me wondering, no, if I'm still alive. So those people are more valuable to me now after going through that experience.
Definitely. And it's the same on YouTube. If you get known for making World of Warcraft videos predominantly, just as an example, could be any game, and then you start kind of trying to diversify into covering other games. You're still covering WoW, but then you're just like, oh, that's covered Diablo 3 as well. And all of a sudden, this chunk of your audience just immediately switches off. It's like, well, they're playing another game, not interested in that game, and I'm only here for WoW, goodbye. It's the patience of the viewers just isn't there. And I think also as well, it is a lot to do with the type of people that watch World of Warcraft videos. They are the most dedicated of WoW players.
Yeah.
And if you're dedicated to an MMO, chances are most of your time is funneled into that one game. So they don't want to watch you do anything else or talk about anything else. But as a YouTuber, especially if you get into that habit of making a video every day, it can get a bit stale to make the same sort of video all the time, and you just want to inject a little bit more excitement. You want to explore other things as well, and it's very frustrating to have that.
Well, I'm sure it's especially difficult when, you know, for example, during the Pandaria cycle, there was, what, 16 months between two patches and no fresh content between. You know, so I don't know how you would make a daily video on WoW when there's a drought of information like that.
I used to just focus on, okay, so what else is there to do in the game while you're waiting? Well, you can go back and do old achievements, you can farm rare mounts, and you can speculate on what's to come, can't you? So there's always something to talk about, even though, funnily enough, that whole period of time was the hardest for me because I hated Mr. Pandaria. I mean, I probably only still played World of Warcraft during that expansion because I was a YouTuber.
Yeah.
If I hadn't have been trying to build a channel and trying to fulfill my dream of paying the rent through YouTube money, then I probably wouldn't have even been playing WoW. That's how much I hated it.
And that's sad. It's that, and I had so much hope for World of the Draenor, and so far I'm enjoying it a lot more. I just had to abandon the class I like to play to find enjoyment. Yeah, because I'm back playing my warrior, so it's...
What, tanking still?
No, I'm actually not a main tank. Like, I do sometimes tank. Like, if I'm basically the third tank, where if the two main tanks aren't there, I'll pick up. So I got a couple of our first kills as tanking, but I am primarily Gladiator DPS, and that is a weird beast.
I can't get my head around that at all. If I see someone with a sword and shield, I expect them to be tanking.
Yeah, it's fun, though. Like, I don't know. It's a weird, quirky build that you have to have very specific stat composition to make it work well, but it's fun. Like, I get to charge in like I was tanking, but I'm not tanking.
I'm enjoying healing. I mean, I tanked for 8 years, and now I'm a healer. That's kind of strange.
I can't do healing still. Like, I have a healer in Final Fantasy XIV. I've never really had a WoW healer. But my very first MMO experience was EverQuest, and I played a cleric because I always liked playing clerics in Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. Well, in Dungeons & Dragons, you can make a very melee, tanky cleric. Like, that's a thing you can do, and it works really well. That was not what the cleric was in EQ at all. It was a healer. It was a hardcore healer. And so it pretty much ruined my impression of healers from that point on. There's a thing called the complete heal rotation, where when you were fighting a raid boss, every 3 seconds, someone had to be casting a complete heal, which basically healed the tank up from whatever to full. Problem is, it was a 12-second cast. So I don't know if you remember the Molten Core Trank rotations, where, you know, when somebody macroed a Trank, they would tell the next person in the order to macro their Trank.
Uh-huh.
We would have these complete heal macros. It's like, so when I cast mine, it would say for the next person in the rotation to begin casting theirs. So every 3 seconds, there had to be a complete heal landing, or, you know, you just died. And that was the way raiding worked. So, yeah, it completely destroyed my enjoyment of the concept of healing from that point on.
It is not that way in WoW. Absolutely not. You should try it.
I have a priest. I have a disc priest that I've got to 91. But yeah, I don't know. It would be interesting to try it. I have almost habitually played tanks in every game since probably Dark Age Camelot. But anyway, we found a way to make warlords happier, even though we're not playing Death Knights.
Yeah, and it's a lot more relaxing for me because I get to heal, and tanking is by far the most stressful thing in the game.
Oh, yeah.
And the healing is just so relaxing. It's completely different. It's an important role, but yeah, there's no stress. Well, depending on the fight, there's no stress.
Well, healers in general tend to be more collaborative than a lot of other classes. Like, when you're playing DPS, for example, you have, even though you're on the same team with people, you have a friendly rivalry going on to see who's going to top the meters, and usually with healers, it's not quite like that. You know, they're much more willing to cover each other or make sure that, you know, this person uses a cooldown to help out when another person is getting low on mana, or it's more of a team effort, it feels.
That is true, but there's definitely competition amongst healers trying to top the healing meters.
We had a healer once that would do all sorts of horrible things just to top the healing meters. And yeah, we would go back through the logs and see casting the wrong spell just so she could cast more of them during a period of time. Or yeah, I've seen that aspect too.
There's a fine line, though. It's, for me, I try to... I mean, I'm naturally competitive, and I do admit that I like to see my name at the top of any list, but I do try my hardest to be as high on the healing meter as I can and then as low on the overhealing meter as I can. And at the same time, you're still trying to manage your mana so that you have enough to kind of last out the fight, if you will. So that's kind of interesting for me to, you know, to manage all those things and still come out on top. But definitely it's collaborative as well, because you need to kind of work out who's going to do Trank first, you know, who's going to use their cooldown first and so on and so forth. So, yeah, but there's still definitely competitiveness in the healing scene.
How far progressed are you guys now in the content?
We have killed 2, 4, 6 bosses. So we've just got the end of wing bosses to do now.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with our progress, actually. It's going...
Is this normal or heroic?
It's only normal. But in Mists of Pandaria, my guild was pretty much decimated. I mean, by the end of Cataclysm, it was just dead almost. And even in Mists of Pandaria, there were so many people that didn't like pandas and they all left the game. So we had to recruit loads of new people. And we struggled. I don't think we finished any content before the next tier would come out, you know, and it just felt so horrible. But this expansion is going really well. I mean, we're actually... you know, we cleared Heimel, apart from the final boss, we cleared Heimel before Blackrock came out, and I just want to keep that going. It doesn't bother me anymore that it's just normal mode, because we used to really raid hardcore and do heroic mode back in Wrath of the Lich King. It's just really nice, because these are friends that I've known for years and years, and they've come back to the game, and we're just having fun as a group of friends and seeing how far we can get without being too hardcore about it.
It felt so good to finish Heimal before Blackrock. That I hadn't done that since probably Ice Crown era. That was the last time I had cleared a round before the end of the next patch.
Right.
So that was huge for me. Like, but I haven't. I mean, I stopped at Cataclysm and then have been kind of sporadic since, coming back for a few months at a time. So. Part of that was me, but our guild in general hadn't really cleared much before the next phase until Heimal. And the week before Blackrock, we had killed Imperator the week before, and then we got everything but Korag and Imperator on heroic. And right. I thought that was pretty awesome. Like that was a high riding into Blackrock. Now, Blackrock, we've struggled a bit. We've had some illness. We've had some attendance problems. And I think we've got 2 bosses in each wing, maybe?
Yeah.
But it's good to actually be making steady progress again. It makes me happy.
It feels great. And it's really weird because there's been some bosses have taken so much work to get that first kill. And then there's other
Gorger.
They just fell over. Or Gorger was our most recent kill. I mean, oh man, we had such trouble with him.
We cheated. Like, I mean, I consider it cheating. We downloaded the Orgorger add-on, and that's how we got it. That's flat out. That is the way we got it.
What does that add-on do?
It shows you which tunnels are not safe. So right. It'll show you the layout of the floor, and every time he stops, it will color yellow the tunnels he can possibly go down, and red if he is absolutely going to come down your tunnel. That way you can pop a cooldown.
Wow. I had no idea that existed.
Yeah, well, because once you're in the maze, it is so hard to see where he actually is. Especially if you're focusing on DPSing down the boxes, etc.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is not good for camera angles. I hate having to rely on the minimap, but that was how I kept track of where he was. I made him my focus, and then the dot would appear on the minimap.
Ah, yeah, I didn't do that.
But we were trying to control that phase where he's rolling around, basically. We were trying to control the fight, and it just can't be controlled. At least we couldn't do it. So the last time we went there, I just said, you know what, go wherever you want. Try to stay alive and just go wherever you want. And it worked for us. Chaos worked for some reason.
Yeah. I guess we haven't downed all the second bosses because we're still working on the train fight. That is a crazy fight. The operator...
Thogar,
yeah.
I'm loving the different type of boss fights we're getting these days.
They're really good. Like, they're really interesting and they feel, you know, fun. Like, some of the boss fights are annoying, but like Orgorger, but Thogar is just fun. I mean, it's a skill check and a... a movement check, but it's going to be an enjoying fight to beat. Like, once we get that down, it's got a fun little dance to it. I really enjoyed Darmok. That was a fun fight.
That's just the Beast Lord.
Yeah, the Beast Lord. I really liked that fight for some reason.
See, that's the fight that we went to the first time and just one-shot him. I did so much research and preparation, and then I went over it in TeamSpeak with the guildie, saying, like, this is what you have to do, this is what you have to look out for, and the list went on and on and on, and then the boss just died. And it was like, wow, this is such a busy fight, but it didn't punish us for being, you know, less than perfect.
Yeah, we took a long time to even try it. We wasted probably 2 weeks working on Orgorger. And then once we started trying other bosses, we just started knocking them down. But we only raid a couple hours at a time, two nights a week.
Yeah, we do 3 hours, two nights a week.
Okay, so we have run on quite a bit at this point. There's a couple questions that I like to ask everyone. Okay. First question is, what are you afraid of? Like, what things, in any context that you want to put it in, what are some of your fears?
The most obvious one that comes to mind is spiders, which is fairly common, I know, but I do have a actual phobia of them. I guess I have a fear of being alone. I'm quite needy when it comes to having just people with me. I don't like the idea of living by myself.
Yeah. Well, and thankfully you have Mac.
Yes, and he can never leave ever.
No. He seems like a really great guy. I don't really know him well, other than, you know, occasional comments in, you know, one of your streams, but he seems like a really great guy.
Yeah, well, he puts up with me, so he's very laid back, fortunately, and he doesn't take any of my nonsense, so we compliment each other well.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing, is to be with somebody that compliments you. Like, you know, my wife is good at the things I am horrible at, and I think that's important.
He's strong where I am weak.
Yeah, you know, she is a very analytical person. She is a very, you know, she's a rock star math teacher. And, you know, I barely passed college algebra, so we definitely complement each other's strengths. I think that's important, is, you know, whoever you end up with in life, you should find somebody that you work well with.
Yeah, I think if you can both just sit inside a room, say, spend an evening inside the same room, and just be, you know, there's no pressure to have to do anything together or chat together. You can just enjoy a space comfortably for one another.
Yeah, like, my wife and I have gotten to the point where we're just happy if we're in the same house. Like, you know, we will holler down at each other or talk to each other, but we won't necessarily be in the same room. I mean, it doesn't have to be the same room. It's just we're used to our routines, and we're always there, and the other one's always there. And it just works.
He's sitting behind me right now playing Euro Truck Simulator.
I have never played that game. I've always kind of wanted to play that game because it looks so weird. It is so far out of the realm of the games I play.
It surprised me when he told me he downloaded the trial. I was like, oh, okay. And then the next day he said, yeah, I bought it now. I was like, oh, okay. But he can go hours without even saying anything to me because he's just so into that game.
It's funny. That's me in Skyrim or any of the Elder Scrolls guys. I'll just disappear in for, you know, hours at a time. That and Civilization. I can lose entire days to Civilization.
Does your wife play any games?
No, she really doesn't. And that's the weirdest thing about this. It's like she has her own hobbies, but she, her eyes never fused as a child. So she always sees two images. And back in the 16-bit era, she could play like Tetris Attack and things like that with me. But once it moved to three-dimensional images, she just can't. She doesn't have the depth perception. She can't, like, go see 3D movies or anything like that.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's just not feasible for her to play. And she's not really that interested in any way. But she's super supportive, so we support each other's quirks.
That's good. The reason I asked was because, you know, he can sit over there and spend an entire evening playing a game and not talking to me, and it's completely fine because I'm sat over here playing a game and I'm probably not talking to him either. But it's unusual for a partner who doesn't play games to have that sort of understanding.
Well, in our case, she is super into her job. That is like her. I mean, she's a teacher. She's a rock star teacher. She's, you know, gotten awards and things like that. And she's a serious statistics teacher. She started a forensics program at her school. So she does all this stuff on the side with that. But had she not had something like that, then yeah, it would be difficult. But a lot of the reason why I play as many games as I do is because I am entertaining myself. I'm exceptionally good at entertaining myself when nothing else is going on. That's part of being an only child. There are some nights she's not home until 7 or 8 at night because she's been at school doing something. So the other question I always ask is, what gives you hope? And you can set that in any context you want.
Stupidity.
Hope. Stupidity gives you hope?
My own stupidity enables me to feel hope when there is none, usually.
Ah.
I don't know. I guess the only... this is hard. Okay, so we talked about YouTube and how difficult it is and how frustrating it can be. And how 1 minute you're seeing huge growth and then the next minute it's all almost been taken away. And I keep doing it because I love it and I have this hope inside me that, you know, it will get better. I just have to keep feeding the machine, keep feeding the monster. And I'm not sure that's a clever way to be seeing it or not. So that's why I answered it in that way. My own stupidity gives me hope. I'm quite a cynical person in real life, to be honest. I don't have huge amounts of optimism. The relationship that I have with my partner pretty much fuels my life, so to speak, and gives me happiness. So, yeah. I don't know. Is that too deep an answer?
No. That's the whole point of these questions, is to go deep. I mean, the entire point of this podcast is to talk about you and, you know, basically give people a slight window into the person that is Kelric. So I think that's a brilliant answer. I don't know. Like, I think you are going to do fine. I just don't know how to, I get frustrated when I can't help people out. Like, I will latch onto somebody and think what they're doing is brilliant, and I want to try and shake the world and make other people realize that what they're doing is amazing. And I try and do that as often as I can. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I get frustrated when, I've heard you off and on talk about how difficult this is, and you produce such a better product than anyone else I watch. And I just want you to do wonderful things and be able to do it full time.
Thank you. It's really nice for you to say that. And I'm grateful that there's people out there that feel that way as well. I mean, I've been known to give shout outs to people that I feel are deserving. I mean, I don't have a huge audience that I'm talking to, but if I have just a few followers and there's someone that deserves, you know, just a bit more attention, then I'll absolutely shout them out, because it is a really difficult profession, if you will, if you can call it a profession, to try and succeed in, because it is very fickle. Things just can change. It's out of your control. The whole YouTube platform has algorithms built into it that are working against you as well, and it's very, very weird. But it's nice to have people such as yourself just trying to throw out a helping hand, and I appreciate it.
Before we wrap things up, is there anything else you want to talk about? Any upcoming things that you're excited about?
Ooh, I'm excited about possibly going to Gamescom this year.
I think that's going to be awesome. I wish I could go, but, you know, that would be a long, long trip.
Yeah, see, I go to BlizzCon. I've been to BlizzCon twice now, and flying from the UK to America, the way I do it, it's 3 flights. So it's a huge undertaking.
Yeah.
And then I remember, like, last year I watched Gamescom, I watched the live stream, and I was like, this is in Germany, it's so close to me. Why am I going to America all the time when I could be just hopping onto a single plane, going to Germany, it's like an hour and a half or something, and enjoying this huge conference. So I'm looking forward to doing that this year. I really want to do more things like that are close to me. And in fact, this past week, I went to a virtual reality conference, which was like a 2-hour drive or so away from me. And that's the sort of thing that really excites me. It gets me out of the house, gets me to these interesting things. And it's not just every November, I'll actually get to go somewhere. I'll get to go to BlizzCon. Now, you know, having the opportunity to go to other places as well more often, that's keeping me going right now.
I had like this big anxiety over the concept of a convention, because like the first convention I went to was PAX South back in January, and I don't know, I had this whole built up anxiety about what it would be like to meet people, and it was so weird at PAX because it was almost like there was this aura of acceptance over the entire thing where everyone that was there was a massive geek and there was no attempt at pretense of being cool or whatever. So whatever anyone wanted to do just was cool. Like if you wanted to dress up as a unicorn, everybody was going to be supportive because, you know, you were going to be the best unicorn you could be. And I just never really experienced that. I wasn't expecting it to be that chill. And I'm curious if the aura of BlizzCon is similar to where everybody just kind of gets along because you guys are all into the same thing.
It definitely is. I mean, my first ever convention I went to was BlizzCon 2013. So, you know, that's starting off with a bang, if you like, but it did feel just so very comfortable because everyone who was there, they were all interested in exactly the same things as you. They weren't only just gamers, but they played your games as well.
Yeah.
And it was just such a great feeling. It was an emotional ride for me. Like, I remember I met Chris Metzen at the first one, just briefly had my picture taken with him. And I remember listening to the talks for Wars Adrenaline and everything, and I came back and I was just so inspired by the whole thing. It was just crazy. And I actually messaged him. I messaged Chris Metzen, like a stupid band girl, and I was like, thank you so much for this amazing experience that you provided us with. It was just so insane and motivating, and it was life-changing in a way, if I could just be a bit, you know, silly, if you like. But
that's not silly at all.
It was amazing. I mean, you can't beat the first one. The second one was great as well, and it's even better. But the first time you go, it just blows you away. I highly recommend it.
I would love to go. I just don't know if that's in the cards, because that's still a... It's not as long a trip for me, but it's still a trip. It's a sizable trip.
It is a sizable trip. But I'm terrified of flying as well.
I hate flying so much. I'm a big guy, so flying is just not comfortable. Like, I'm 6'4", and there's no such thing as comfortable flying, because you always end up on these tiny puddle jumpers when, you know, you're going from a small location like I have to, you know, major metro areas. You're going to have to shift planes a lot, and it's just not comfortable. I did it a few years ago to attend a forensics conference with my wife, just to kind of go as moral support to New York State, and man, it was frustrating. Like, it was probably one of the worst experiences just to fly there. And so, like, when I went to PAX South, I drove, even though it was like a 9-hour drive, just to avoid flying.
Yeah, I wish I could. I mean, 3 flights over there, 3 flights back. Every single time I'm praying to whatever god might exist, please let it fall out of the sky.
Yeah. Well,
it just goes to show how good it is if I'm willing.
Yeah, if you're willing to do it twice. And hopefully they'll have a lot of exciting things to talk about this year. I'm really jealous of the people that are getting to go to PAX East and hang out and play with Overwatch. I'm really looking forward to that game.
And that's going to be a great game. We got to try it briefly at last year's BlizzCon, and it's definitely looking very promising. So I can't wait to see what they, you know, what the beta is going to look like when it finally comes.
Yep. Well, I think we've... had a lengthy conversation here, unless you have anything else to add, and we'll start to wrap things up.
No, I've had a great time. Thank you so much for just hanging
out. Yeah, like I love these things because like they're partially a guilty pleasure because I just want to hang out and chat with people and record a podcast. No,
it's your listeners.
People are going to realize that, you know, these things are variable length, so you know they're either going to listen or they're not going to listen. I'm not too concerned. I have the luxury of not trying to make a living off what I do, which to some extent is a luxury, because, I would care a lot more about the length of things if I was trying to do this for real. And I have so much respect for you that you are doing this for real, because that would scare me to death. So you are one of my heroes.
I have a hero standing right behind me, enabling me to do it, so it's not all me.
Go Mac.
go mad.
Okay, why don't you tell our listeners where they could find all your projects? So give me the rundown.
Okay, well, primarily I am a YouTuber. I create a lot of content. Every week there will be several new videos. That's youtube.com/Kelrick. And then allow me to just point out there's no U in my name. This is a common misconception. So youtube.com/Kelrick. I do stream occasionally. twitch.tv/Kelrick. But yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I love Twitter, as we've already discussed, and I love interacting with people. That's twitter.com/KelrickDK.
Awesome. Well, I am so happy that we were finally able to get together and have this conversation. When I started this whole idea, I had a list in my head of people, and you were on that list from the moment it started. I just took me a while to get down to you. So thank you so much for hanging out and chatting. And hopefully you had a fun time, and hopefully our listeners will enjoy the conversation.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and maybe we can do this again one day.
Very much so. Okay, folks, have a really good night, and we're going to close things off. Goodbye.
Bye.